Hey, Dog Walk listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
All right, Bit Man, today is Thursday. It's June 10th. Welcome to the Dog Walk presented by Barstool Sports. If you didn't listen yesterday, you're going to want to stop this right now and go listen to part one. This is part two right here with Richard Roper and Jeff D. Lowe. A lot of great movie talk. We get into it more here in part two, so let's just hop right into it. Here's part two with Richard Roper and Jeff D. Lowe. Is there any actor that completely ices you because of a review?
Yes. There have been a couple of cases. I'll tell this story because I've told it before. I was doing the Tonight Show. Roger and I were doing guests on the Tonight Show, and Ben Stiller was on. And I know Zoolander has become a huge cult film, but I did not love the first one. The second one I thought was a disaster. But I think I gave maybe 2.5 stars to the first one, sort of a mild, hey, it's got a great concept, you know, didn't love it. So backstage at the Tonight Show, they have all these guest books. Anybody who's ever on their side, and there's like, you know, dozens of them. It's real cool because you can pull out, hey, wow, 1984, Eddie Murphy's first appearance, and he put a little note in there and everything. So the producer comes backstage. Hey, guys, so good to have you on the show again. Ben Stiller's going to be on. He's in the other dressing room. And we're like, okay, didn't love his movie, but I love him. You know, I think he's done a lot of great work. And they go, hey, we got the guest book here for you guys to sign. So Roger grabs the guest book, and he looks at me, and he had this move where he kind of just raised his eyebrows like a cartoon character, like, come take a look at this. And instead of saying, you know, to Jay Leno and the Tonight Show producers, I'm so glad to be on the show again, Ben Stiller wrote, to Ebert and Roper, why don't you take those two thumbs and shove them up your ass? So I guess he hadn't gotten over it, you know? And then he was on first, and he left before. He wouldn't come on with us, you know?
Really?
And we later heard from him, and he goes, I'm sorry, because I know he's a sweet guy. I don't know him, you know, per se, but, you know, he's got a great reputation and very generous person. And he just said, you know, I'm sorry I had that reaction, but I spent 4 years of my life working on that movie. And Roger said, well, we spent 90 minutes sitting through it, so, you know, let's call it even. He was a little harsher about that stuff sometimes than I was. But, you know, I get that. And Jeff, you know this, too. Nobody sets out and says, let's make a shitty movie. Maybe Adam Sandler, when he's got his 15th, you know, comedy with his buddies, he knows it's not going to be an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
And I've got relatives who work in the movie business, you know, and on crew and props and things like that. And lots of friends who work behind the scenes, screenwriters who work for 15 years on a script and then it finally gets made. So I get that. Everybody works hard at what they do. But again, you know, I always looked at my mission. It's the final product. I know everybody went into it with great intentions. Is it something the average working man or woman should spend their money on? End of story.
Yeah, that's who you owe it to, right? Right. Like, they're the ones buying the papers. That you're another one hitting the going to the website. So that's totally. Is there a movie? And it's interesting, too, because our boss, he rates pizza. I don't know if you've ever seen
his video. Yeah.
And, you know, all the time people come up.
It's one of the few jobs that I look at and go, like, wow, what a cool job. Because all I hear from people is you watch movies and you get to write about them. I'm like, yeah, it gets a little more complicated. I'm like, pizza. No, I love that. Yeah.
Exactly. But you know what I mean? Same thing. Like, I've been with them so many times. People are like, hey, really, man?
Yeah.
7-1 here, you know? And, is there any movie for you that you feel like people come up to you more than others and be like, hey, Richard, well, this one? Like, really, come on. Is there any one that people are kind of the most ticked at that you kind of docked?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's generational. It depends at different points in my career. When the Lord of the Rings franchise first started, I had not read, I mean, I know about Tolkien and I know about the books, but, and listen, I thought, it became this legendary franchise. But the first one, to me, I was sitting in the theater and it was like 3.5 hours of elves and precious and, you know, goblins and shit. For me, it was just like, we're going to see like 9 more of these, you know. So I did not give a positive recommendation to the first Lord of the Rings movie. And I heard from people about that for a very, very long time. I eventually, that did kind of come around. And I went back and I've watched it. And, it's a really, really well-made film. And the other thing is, it's the Star Wars universe. I'm probably more generous than Jeff might be or other fans because I've never been... I recognize its place in movie history and especially the originals and all of that. It's not my favorite genre, you know, and I am not combing through the fan fiction sites and the Twitterverse and everything else about every spinoff and different casting of characters and how this thing. So there have been some of the more recent films that people hated, like they hated a country they're at war with. I mean, you know, the visceral level of dislike for some of these films. And sometimes I'll say, listen, it's a cowboy pop opera set in space. I don't know if it's completely in tune with the rest of the universe, but I give it 3 stars. And then I'll hear from them, like, you're unfit.
Yeah, Last Jedi was
yeah.
Were you at, did you go to the Last Jedi premiere in California and in L.A.?
I don't think so.
Yeah. That was my parting gift when I was at Good Morning America. I got to go because I'm a Star Wars super fan. Yeah. You would have thought that movie was going to win an Oscar when you left that theater. Not a fucking soul disliked that movie. And then it became the most divisive Star Wars movie ever made. But Star Wars is, I almost hate talking about, my office at home is lined with Star Wars action figures from my childhood. Mm. Like, I obsessed. I almost hate talking about it at this point because where Marvel has become such an easy discussion, and for the most part, everyone loves Star Wars. It's just always filled with some form of hate on one side or the other. And it's so ugly.
I mean, actors have left social media and almost left acting because of the reaction to their performances, which is, you know, these fucking people sometimes. I mean, it's like you're just being cruel and it's easy. And we all know about, you know, social media bullying, but it's so true. I see some of that stuff. I almost never engage. I'll engage with film fans on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook or anything who want to have a discussion. Hey, Rich, love your reviews, but I think you're way off on this or that. And I'll say, hey, why'd you think that? Or thanks for your input or something. But when it just comes to, like, you know, die. I read your review, die. And I'm like, well, thank you. Have a fine day. And Jeff is absolutely right. You get that in the Star Wars universe. And I'm like, I wish, you know, there was a Goodfellas universe where there was that much passion. But nobody hates on it, I guess. But, yeah, and just when they announced casting decisions for the next chapter, and people go nuts, and they go, but in the original comic book, he was part Icelandic, and his DNA was this, and now, and I'm like, you're talking about something based on a comic book. You know, they get, and this is another thing that drives me nuts, is when people go nuts over a trailer. And they say, this trailer, we're doomed. And I'm like, you want to talk about looking at a trailer? Look at the trailer for the original Star Wars. I'm sure you've seen it many times. It looks like the worst TV show of all time, not the worst movie of all time. And trailers could be nothing more than misleading, including a lot of horrible comedies where they take the only 90 seconds that are funny. Yeah. And then I'll hear from people, well, but that looked really funny based on the trailer. And I'm like, well, the menu looks really good based on the pictures and the laminated things.
It means they did their job then. They marketed it well. What a shock. Yeah.
Yeah. You always strive. I noticed when it comes to Star Wars, you're always like, it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, well, I liked The Last Jedi. I liked it a little less after the premiere, and premieres are tough because you're put into an environment that is, you're meant to like it.
It's magical.
Especially a Star Wars movie, which is, it was in a massive theater on USC's camp. It was crazy. So I still do like The Last Jedi quite a bit, but Star Wars, it broke me a bit, but it's funny because you know what it goes back to? It's like, what's the one Star Wars thing that everyone agrees they love? And that's, again, it's a series. It's The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
You get to go back and do kind of what Star Wars used to always be. Less about the universe.
Yes.
Which, again, fucking Luke Skywalker did show up, yes. But more about, like, kind of the grittier stuff that got people into it so many years ago. So,
Actually had that kind of cinematography and the camera angles and everything where they were clearly paying tribute to that. And that was very cool. And, again, worked much better than it would have as a two-hour movie.
It's just the hate. It's like
it's incredible.
There's a lot.
I collected the action figures as a kid. Like that's what I think. When I think Star Wars, I think of that. On our pod, we just don't talk about it much anymore because
you can't win. No one ever says you changed my mind about The Empire Strikes Back now because of what you said. And that's the thing too. I like what you said about, you know, it's fun because you gotta, when I review movies too, they're not just one movie compared to another movie.
Right.
Because someone will say, why'd you give this 3.5 stars? And then you gave that 3 stars. And I'm like, what did the movie set out to do? What did the filmmakers want to do? What was the intention of the film? So when you see, you know, there's a film on Netflix right now called The Woman in the Window with Amy Adams and Julianne Moore and Gary Oldman, all these Academy Award level actors. And it's supposed to be a takeoff on Rear Window. So it's got Hitchcockian influences. And it's the biggest piece of trash you've ever seen. It's, you know, they should have closed the curtains
on
the window.
It's barely a movie.
And, you know, I'm watching that going, Roger used to say this too. It takes a group of really, really talented people to make a memorably bad film. Because if it's just bland, if it's just a mediocre rom-com or a second-rate, you know, knockoff Bruce Willis action film, all right, fine. You know, they all kind of knew what they were doing. This movie, I guarantee you, the day one, they go, let's get some Oscars. Let's go with this. And that one I gave like one star because, yeah, it was aspirational. And when it misfired, it really misfired. When I see a horror film that's made on a low budget and, you know, borrows a lot of scares from a lot of other movies, but still, you know, gave me 90 minutes of involvement because the dog went out to examine the barking or the noise, and the poor dog always gets it first in the horror movies. It's the worst thing ever. And then there's the one room in the set. Don't go down there. Well, of course, they're going to go down there. And it turns out that the country home was built on the site of an orphanage that was burned. We know all that stuff's going to happen. But I'm going to, you know, if it does all of that effectively, I'm going to give it a recommendation. Does it mean it's a better quality film in terms of the production values and the acting than The Woman in the Window? No, but it succeeded at what it wanted to be.
What's up, everybody? If you're watching this on video, you see that we have the beef kits right in front of us. These awesome blue and white striped kits. Awesome packaging, by the way. Like, people, like, the contents inside are very good, don't get me wrong, but this box is really sweet. It's got the JP Graziano classic logo with the Barstool stars and stripes. It's really sweet. But anyways, the beef kit, you guys know the drill by now. Go to tasterealchicago.com. Go get your beef kit. It's the perfect time to do so. They're fully stocked up, so it's only going to take a couple days to get to you. So if you want beef this weekend, there's a chance it gets to you. You could have beef this weekend, so go do that. Tasterealchicago.com. You can get your Mezzo Giardiniera and your Italian beef seasoning. It's dummy-proof. We've been saying that the whole time. Anybody could do it. The directions are on the side of the bottle. So go do that. Tasterealchicago.com. Go get your beef kit. Have a nice weekend. And, do that right now. Tasterealchicago.com.
That's what I always say, because we mention, and there's a couple recent examples too. When I rate a movie, I'm rating the movie within the context of what it's supposed to be.
Yep.
Godzilla vs. Kong is a great example of that. I thought for what Godzilla vs. Kong was supposed to be, I think I gave it like, I want to say around 80-ish.
Yep.
It was similar to another movie that, probably better made, better acted. And I got that question, like, you think it's on par with that? I go, well, for what these two movies are supposed to be, they're two totally different things.
Yeah,
they kind of are. Like, if you're going to make a movie that's supposed to be campy and stupid, and it nails it and does it well, and, like, that's kind of how you're supposed to view it, then, yeah, I'm going to have it up there. Like, I get this with comedy. It's, like, Not Another Teen Movie, I think, is an incredibly well-done parody.
Yeah.
Right?
I haven't thought about that one in a while.
And I watched it recently. Man, does it hold up? And you're like, is it maybe as nuanced as some other comedies out there? No, but for what it's supposed to be,
totally,
it's fucking excellent.
Scary movie.
They crush it. Yeah,
Scary movie, yeah.
That's why the ones after that. Like, I'll compare Scary Movie 1 to, like, the other ones down the line, which were Meet the Spartans, right? That's where you start comparing. Yeah,
oh, man, that's so true. Though, with I agree with and people with Godzilla versus King Kong. I even had people say, "Well, what's it about?" I go, "It's about Godzilla, and he goes up against King Kong." There are some titles of movies that tell you the entire movie, and we know that, and that's what we're leading up to. And of course, all of the rest is nonsense. But it was really well done, and it was a great movie for people to get back in the theaters and watch it with the surround sound in it.
People are like, what about the characters? Well, the character development is it's Godzilla and Kong. Those are the
Kong
characters.
Was the third most complicated character in the film.
Yeah.
I just think it's something that people will never understand. Like, it'll never get through. I was reading, just knowing you were coming in today, I was reading, Roger's Wikipedia, and he said, I'm not comparing Speed 2, Sandra Bullock on a cruise ship to American Beauty. You know, there's a different layer to things. And I just don't know.
You know, to me, it's like, I for some reason, people with movies, they want to lump them all together. And I'm like, listen, if you go to a steakhouse in Chicago or New York, that's got a great reputation, and it's going to cost everybody $200, and the wine's marked up $50 and everything, you have certain expectations. If you go through the drive-through at Wendy's or McDonald's, you're looking for something else. And sometimes that McDonald's is going to be more satisfying because that's what you want and that's what you expect.
Yep.
So you don't compare those two and go like, I don't know how to tell you this, but that tomahawk steak that's $178 at Gibson's in Chicago is way better than the Wendy's cheeseburger. No shit.
Yeah. I'm someone who I do like the slop here and there, though. I do. I'm a sucker for bringing the characters back. I'm still clamoring for another Goonies, and I just want give me Josh Brolin in those workout
slop.
Shorts.
You know what I mean? Slop like the slop I like. I love really, really bad movie. Not even like so bad it's good. Like that recent one. Silk Road. I watched that like three times. Yeah! It was so bad. And I told stuff. They're like, oh, like so bad it's good. I'm like, no. No, not even close to so bad it's good. Like, I love a good zero. Like, I just, I live for that one or two zero a year. I'm like, I hated that Absolutely. So much, but I almost love it, like, that much.
There's one coming out this week, I think. It's called The Misfits, and it's a heist movie. And Pierce Brosnan is this career thief. Pierce Brosnan still looks great. Nobody has looked better for the last 35 years as the guy at the bar with a drink in his hand than Pierce Brosnan in the suit and the open collar shirt, right?
That's a good point.
So he's playing this long time career thief. And then there's this band of younger thieves, and they're all Robin Hoods. They want to steal money from this horrible Arab sheikh who's got terrorist ties, and they're going to steal gold from him. And Nick Cannon leads this bunch, you know, and he somehow, even when they're in five-star hotels, manages to only wear a sleeveless T-shirt so we can see how buff Nick Cannon is. And he narrates the story, and, of course, there's a multicultural band of thieves, and we know there's going to be twists and turns and everything, and it's unbelievably bad in terms of the, you know, what it's all about. And it's so much fun. It looks great. And they're stealing every kind of little Ocean's 11 trope and all these other things. But you know, when they're making it, they're going like, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Let's just do this. And if you go back and look at it, none of it makes sense. And then you've got like Tim Roth shows up at the villain. So again, sometimes when you're seeing these great actors slumming it, Woman in the Window, they weren't slumming it. They thought they were doing a prestige project. Misfits, they know they're making a silly heist movie that they all got a nice paycheck and they got to film it overseas and probably had as much fun making it as a lot of other films because nobody's taking it seriously.
Do you have a worst movie? I guess that people would know.
Yeah, that's tough, Eddie. You know, that again, it kind of goes back to what the film is trying to do. And for me, the films that I've given like zero stars to are the films that like exploit violence toward children, torture porn was the term. And, you know, I know the Saw franchise, and they just did another one, Book of Spiral. I don't know what Chris Rock was thinking. He wanted to do a horror film. He could have got it in his pick of A-list horror thriller scripts, and he kind of rebooted the Saw franchise. And that's an example of one, you know, where they zoom in on close-ups of mutilations and stuff. I don't know. I'm not saying Saw's the worst movie because it's pretty well made. The first one, you know, Danny Glover's in it. But that type of film, you know, and again, films that put children in danger just to show them being hurt or to kind of yank us around, those are the films that I'm going to give zero stars to because they're not only terrible, but I feel like they're in some cases morally bankrupt because the filmmakers know what they're doing and they're still doing it to try to get people into theaters.
Do you have one, Jeff?
I was going to ask if you knew mine. I'm very public about mine typically. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we're friends. So
I think Emoji Movie, is that yours?
No, Emoji Movie's close. but that's no, it's my lowest. So on the website, if you go on, it's like 5,000, like three. It's Jack and Jill with Adam Sandler. I think it's the worst movie. I think it's so. The product placement of what they do in that movie and watching fucking Al Pacino dance in that Dunkin' Donuts commercial. Wow. It is. That was the angriest I've ever been watching a movie because it just felt like you were being and I love Adam Sandler too. Like it's not even Adam Sandler thing. Like I mean, and I'm like number one Uncut Gems defender logged on. Like I love
me too.
So much.
Me too.
But man, Jack and Jill felt like you were being exploited. It felt so wrong.
I think I had it whatever year that came out. It's probably what, 2004? I don't know, somewhere in the 2000s. I think I had it as the worst movie of the year. So I'm with you on that.
They're on a green screen with Johnny Depp at a Lakers game. It wasn't even an actual Lakers game. It was like it just felt.
And that was the thing. That's the thing about Adam Sandler and. You know, he's had a great career, but there was that certain period there after he had the 90s, you know, resurgence after SNL and, you know, because he got fired from SNL or didn't get brought back, you know, and then he did, you know, Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison and all these films that still, you know, people love to this day. And then he got in the zone where he could make anything he wanted and he just, you know, he was the only guy that would show up for a movie in cargo shorts and a T-shirt and go, well, my character wears this. And the wardrobe would be like, yeah, but he's playing an insurance salesman. And he just got that lazy. And I'm with Jeff on this, though, because it was such a disrespect to the audience and condescending and cynical to say, like, I can do any. And getting these big stars who were thinking, well, I'm going to be in an Adam Sandler movie. This, you know, everyone seems to love him. And he did so many of those. And, you know, you would see every once in a while, you'd see Spanglish or you'd see Uncut Gems, even to this day. And you see the talent that he's got. And he's still, you know, he's got this deal with Netflix now to keep making movies. And he just did the Halloween thing last year. That was horrible, too. And he's going back to doing that weird,
ridiculous six.
Yeah. And he's doing the you know, the weird voice and everything. And it's like, you don't have to do anything anymore. You know, why not just do Uncut Gems every once in a while? And listen, he always gives his friends, you know, they all, hey, come on back, Rob Schneider, you know.
The Wrong Missy, they had a nice vacation in Hawaii in that one saw.
There's a lot where it's like, where did he want to go on vacation? And that's the old Michael Caine joke, of course. Not joke, but story, you know, that he would always say, you know, where's the movie set? And they'd say, well, you know, it's Jaws 3, but we're going to be in the Bahamas for 2 months. He's on, he's in, you know. But yeah, Jack and Jill, I would have to say bottom 10 for me as well.
Dunkachino. I has to haunt Al Pacino. That just it's unbelievable.
You think so?
What's yours?
The worst one that always sticks out to me is because I saw it in theaters, because I'm big, like, oh, if I paid really a ticket to go see it. Now, One Missed Call was pretty bad. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I get that.
Yeah. But there's a lot of bad horror movies.
My buddies say The Happening, that one gets brought up to me a lot, because people actually saw it in theaters because it was M. Night. And
it's sort of like if The Quiet Place went horribly wrong.
The
Happening.
Yeah. There's I think my favorite Roger review, because I like bad movies. Mm-hmm. I love, like, the concept. I think looking at, and we have a box of DVDs of bad movies and Casablanca at work that we use as props every now and then. Like, Meet the Spartans is in there. Kirk Cameron Saves Christmas is in there. That's one. You want a movie. But Home Alone 3 is in there, which is my favorite, like, because he loved Home Alone 3. And Home Alone 3 is one of the most fascinatingly bizarre movies of any franchise ever. Have you ever looked at the synopsis for Home Alone compared to Home Alone 3?
No.
I have to read it out loud.
It's pretty out there.
It's this is like, I could do like a spoken word performance on this. I think it's one of my favorite. And it's honestly, it's really not as bad as I feel like, because you know, people kind of clown it because there's no Macaulay Culkin. We tweet it every Christmas, I think, from the podcast.
Yeah, because I don't think, like, listen, it's definitely not one or two. I don't think it's the worst, the number three, but I don't know.
It's have you seen it?
What? No, I haven't.
It's
the movie, the number three?
Home Alone 3,
Yes.
Okay, so Home Alone, this is the Home Alone 3 synopsis. I mean, Home Alone 1 synopsis is probably like what? Kid left at home, fights off burglars.
Yep.
Four internationally wanted thieves working for a North Korean terrorist organization lose a $10 million missile cloaking computer chip at an airport. I mean, just the level of, I mean, from guys breaking in and flooding the basements. It's a miss. And
the wet bandits to Korean terrorists. Jeez,
The movie starts off in Korea, and like they're talking about chips. They almost kill an old woman in the movie. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. This time it's personal.
Miss Hess.
I almost guarantee you, I would bet that that's a case where someone wrote a script and then someone said, you know, remember that action movie script? Let's dust it off and make it a Home Alone movie.
Because
they'll do that sometimes where you're like, how does that even, you know, fit into the world? And it's like, well, they already bought the rights to this thing.
But I love that you told a story about like Roger, like Ben Stiller and stuff, and like the types he'd be like a little harsher on things, because in that review of Home Alone 3, he kind of craps in the first two and says like, this was the one right here. And it's so pure and genuine that it's one of my favorite reviews.
Well, you know, and I the first Home Alone, I completely get. First of all, you know, John Hughes, the screenplay, it's one of the great titles of all time, because it instantly, every kid has that moment of fear when they thought they were left home alone. I mean, it's just, and it is a great setup. And Macaulay Culkin, it's one of the best performances by a kid before he became aware of him being Macaulay Culkin. But I do remember, and if it was Roger, it might have been Gene Siskel, but I think it was more Roger, and they pointed this out, and it's true. It's a really violent film. Like the stuff he does to those bandits is...
It should die.
I mean, it's Roadrunner stuff, except for it's live action. So when you see it now, in retrospect, you're like, jeez, you know? It's like, it's really nasty stuff, man.
They should die. I think somebody said, there's like YouTube video.
They would die
like
seven,
like,
yeah, the seven times.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Hey, let's take a quick break here to talk about Roman, everybody. Stop with the old hacks. Stop with saying the Pledge of Allegiance in your head. Stop with counting backwards from 10. Stop everything else that you're doing, because you got Roman here that can help you out. You don't need to do any of that shit anymore. You got this nice little swipe. Before you're about to do it, you rip it off, you put it on, you let it dry, you're good to go. That's it. It doesn't transfer to your partner, so you don't got to worry about that. There's not going to be some like, oh, my God, what did you put on? What is this? They won't even know. You know, it's just going to be something. It's basically an additive to make things better in the bedroom, and that's all it is, okay? And the best part, like I said, it's discreet. Even the packaging is discreet. It's going to come to your unmarked package. Nobody will even know what it is. So go get it. It's to GetRoman.com/walk. You get your first month swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/walk. I don't know what more I have to say anymore. You need Roman. Everybody needs Roman. GetRoman.com/walk. Go do it. Go enhance a sex life. All right, let's hop back into the show. Do you have something that's been in development hell that you really have always wanted to get made? Is there that one movie you're like, man, that sounds good. Why can't it happen?
Oh, that's a great question. I'd have to go back and look. I mean, the one that immediately comes to mind is Devil in the White City.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, based on this great book. And if people don't know about the World's Fair in Chicago, I believe it was 1893, and they literally created this white city. You know, and a sidebar about this, L. Frank Baum, the aspiring author, went with his family on vacation to the white city at the World's Fair and was inspired in The Wizard of Oz to create the Emerald City of The Wizard of Oz. That was based on him seeing the white city exhibit. But while that was going on in Chicago, there was this doctor who might have been the most prolific serial killer in the history of this country. They don't know how many dozens, if not hundreds, of young women he murdered, because he ran a boarding house, and all these 17, 18, 19-year-olds, even younger, would come from Iowa or Minnesota or Oklahoma to the big city, maybe hoping to get a job at the World's Fair, and he'd bring them into his home, which reportedly had this incredible catacombs and death chambers and torture chambers. So it's a fascinating book about, you know, these two things happening in Chicago, and they've been talking about making it into a movie forever. Scorsese directing, Tom Cruise attached at one point, and I keep reading that it's going into production, but then I talk to people in the Chicago and Illinois film office, and they go, not to our knowledge, and it still hasn't. Because to me, it actually sounds, just from the description, if people get a chance to read the book, it might work better as a Netflix 8-part series.
Something that complex, yeah.
Yeah, with that much going on. But I think it sounds like, to me, like something that would be an incredible visual spectacle, because it could have the combination of like this historical epic and then a chilling horror film wrapped inside of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always been fascinated by that because it's here and everything like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think, wasn't Leo rumored to be playing it too?
Yeah, you think about, you know, DiCaprio and Scorsese, like the perfect combination, because you could see DiCaprio as this charming doctor who has this evil side. We've seen that in some of the films he's done, you know, Tarantino films and things like that as well, that he could play that dark side.
I'll go much dumber. I wish they would have made the 21 Jump Street Men in Black crossover. I really would, because I'm such a Jump Street guy, and that sounded like a great way to do it, like an excuse to do another one, and then they did, and they made that crappy Men in Black movie instead. So.
That's another one where, like, you know, leave it alone.
Yeah, just, you know. 10, I mean, who was banging on the doors? Like, come on.
Yeah,
it's not like Men in Black 3 was...
No, it had already really fallen off. Yeah. But again, you know, that's the thing. When, you know, going back to Eddie's original question, you know, there's still this tendency in Hollywood to not take a chance on that original screenplay for The Devil in the White City that's going to cost $200 million and say, let's throw $150 million at a movie that we could put Men in Black in the title and just redo it again. And thank God for the streaming and other platforms that will take on these prestige projects.
Have you ever been accused? I know one of the funniest things I think going with LCB is they're always accused of being at Disney's pockets, right?
People always think we're big. You're Disney show people.
That Disney is always giving them some side chances. You have anyone that's always accused you?
I hear from people all the time saying the studios must have paid you off. And, you know, I've actually worked for Disney or for some subsidiary of Disney for most of the last 20-some years. You know, the Ebert and Roper was originally an independent show, Siskel and Ebert, and then was, you know, Tribune Company. But by the time I got there, it was Buena Vista Television, which is owned by Disney. So we got checks with the mouse on them. And I will say this, the whole time I was there, almost a total of 9 years, they made it very clear. Michael Eisner was the chairman at the time, made it very clear that there was a separation of church and state, that no one from anyone involved in a Disney movie was ever to contact us other than in normal capacity to say, hey, let's set up a screening, and would never be any repercussions, because the value of the franchise was you could trust us. And I always point to the fact that there's a movie, I think it was called Sahara, and it was directed by Michael Eisner's son. And I gave it thumbs down on the show. And Roger gave it thumbs up, and I'm like, okay, if you liked it, you liked it. And afterwards, he's like, you got some balls on you. And I said, it's not a good movie. And we never heard a word from Disney. So on a Disney-owned show, I ripped a movie by the son of the chairman of Disney. But I hear it all the time, too, from people. And I'm like, first of all, if you think that Universal Pictures is rolling out the big wads of dough for me to give a positive review to something, it just
I always say, please.
Yeah, yeah.
For if they want to throw money in my pocket to say that whatever thing they just put out on Disney Premiere, go for it.
Yeah. How much did they pay you? You get that a lot. And the other one is, did you even see this movie? I'm like, yes, that's the rule. I have to see it and then review it. Well, it doesn't seem to me like you saw the movie.
Is it worse now with social media?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, again, people can still reach out to me with email. The truth is I don't respond to much of those either because you can't win, you know. And, yeah, well, everybody's a critic now, and that's fine. You know, everybody's emboldened to have their opinion. But I'll put a review out there, and there's, you know, 600 replies. First of all, who has the time? You know, I just don't have the time to go through that. And, what am I going to do? If someone says this or that, a few times I'll reply if someone just says something that's, you know, factually wrong. You know, they'll say, this movie got that wrong about this. Or they'll say, well, you're also the guy that gave a negative review to this. And I'll be like, that's not true. Here's a link to my 4-star review. They never answer, though. They never go, oh, my God, you set me right. I'm so sorry. I'm going to send $10 to the charity of your name to make it up to you. So even that, you know, they just go silent then, or they unfollow you if you prove them
but
wrong.
But it's also few and far between, too. I feel like I like a good discussion if someone just completely disagrees with me. But it's like you said earlier. It's like the one or two word, like, it's like stupid or idiot. It's like, all right, well, if you want to call me an idiot and then idiot, comma, two more tweets as to why I disagree, then I'll probably reply.
Yeah,
to
like, yeah.
If you think I'm an idiot, I am. That's fine. But, you know, if you want to have an actual discussion, I'll, like,
yeah,
that's what the platform's for, right? You know,
there's another thing where people will say, I'll never trust you again because you liked a certain movie that they hated. And they're like, you know, they love saying this. You've lost all credibility with me. My wife and I, and it's always the guy, basically, you know, went to see blah, 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 because you gave it 3.5 stars. We walked out after 10 minutes. First of all, you didn't say there was going to be subtitles and there's reading and whatever the reason is, but they'll say, you lost all credibility. And I can't help sometimes respond and say, so what you're saying is, I've done roughly 11,000 film reviews over the years. And because we disagree on this one,
this is it.
I've lost all credibility that everything I've done. And it's like, why would you want to agree with me on every single thing? That's insane, too. So.
Yeah. Well, Richard, thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So what's going on? You got a new podcast as well?
Yeah, new podcast with my longtime radio partner, Rokan. Chicago area listeners will know him. It's called Screen Time. And it is just about what we've been talking about. Anything you can see on a screen, but primarily movies and then the streaming shows as well. And it's, as you guys well know, it's available everywhere. You know, when people say, where's your podcast available? I go, why don't you Google it? There you go. Yeah, you know, but yeah, it's available everywhere. It's called Screen Time. Mm-hmm. We're doing it twice a week now. It's fun because we do the deep dives into films. Talk, you know, we recently did a show on the 35th anniversary of Running Scared, a great buddy cop movie, and got Billy Crystal on to talk about it. We had James Caan on recently to talk about Thief. And believe it or not, guys, the 50th anniversary of Brian's Song is this fall. The best football movie of all time. So, it's great to have, you know, Billy Crystal and James Caan and the likes on. But mostly it's just my chance to kind of talk about what we just talked about, get a little more in deep dive on movies and streaming shows.
Nice. Yeah, sure. You guys to get some great guests, like you said. Awesome. Jeff, anything else?
No.
MovieRankings.net. How about that?
I have some movies to catch up on.
You're going
to
go back and look at that Jack and Jill. I want to see what you had just ahead of it. Like at number 5002.
I mean, I have to answer.
You should check out his site, Richard.
I have to answer what the second to last one is. I want to say it's actually a newer movie that I would be very curious if you, because no human should have watched this. Cher was in it. Cher lent her voice in it. Very recently. Came out last year. I might have been one of 10 people to see this movie. I'm pretty sure this is my second to last.
And it's a Cher voice.
Bobbleheads, the movie. It was a movie of because you know bobbleheads are they're that's the toy everyone talks about, just like the Legos. You know, Lego obviously still relevant. Bobbleheads, though, Cher lent her voice to it. They didn't have the rights to her music, obviously, and I think that may actually be second to last.
Second to last.
Like they had Jack and Jill as the cushion as they were plummeting to Earth there.
Yeah.
Bobbleheads. And again, you know that was a studio meeting. All right, they've already done Lego. Can we get Operation the movie? Yeah, Don't Break the Ice. Bobbleheads. Yeah. And somebody got a bonus.
How much did they pay Cher? It's like,
does she even know she was in it? Did they just put something in front of her one day, you know, at the salon and she read 30 lines?
Probably. Oh, you guys are just two people who have just seen some shit.
Like, you know, that's the thing, and I always say that, Eddie, because people say, man, you get to see every movie. And I go, no, I have to see every movie. It's both. It's both.
Well, that's, and I will say it, because then we'll wrap.
Yeah.
But
No.
I don't want to keep it going. You're but good. That is the that is the other thing that gets me, is I will always reply to when someone says, blank is the worst movie I've ever seen. And I always say, the worst you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
That movie, and it'll be like something like very basic. It'll be like the new Conjuring movie, right? Like, that's the worst you've ever seen?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing worse than that. That's my favorite.
Yeah, I get a lot of that, and it's like a 3-year-old saying, this is my favorite film ever. It's like Piglet's movie. That's, you've seen two movies, kid. You know,
Bobblehead's the movie, though.
And then actually, my last question, too. Are you worried about movie theaters? Are you streaming and demand? Do you like this?
I do like it. And, you know, you look at something like In the Heights. Lin-Manuel Miranda, we talked about him. His first big Broadway hit was In the Heights, and it's coming to theaters on Friday, and it's also going to be straight to HBO Max. And to me, it's two different audiences. And same thing with Cruella. It was $30, and people go, oh, my God, $30 to watch it at home. Well, if you're a young couple and you've got three kids, that's a bargain, $30, compared to what you'd have to do, because, you know, if the kids are old enough to bring them there, maybe you get a sitter for the younger kid going to the theater, concessions and stuff. So I feel like the streaming platform is helping more than it's hurting, and the theater owners are finally starting to get that. Now, Quiet Place Part 2, John Krasinski said, I want a 45-day window. You know, so it's in theaters for 45 days, then it's going to come to streaming. People are starting to go back to theaters. Quiet Place 2, you know, did very well. I think some of these other films coming out, we're going to eventually get the Top Gun movie and Black Widow. So theaters are going to bounce back in a big way, I think.
Not that I said this too, and I don't know if you agree with this. I think too, because we were forced out for so long, it almost, I hate saying it helped, like, it helped it, because, I mean, would COVID really help? But I think it almost helped people realize, like, oh, shit, I really missed the movie. Like, there's people who I know who are going who didn't go before because they're like, damn, like, I really took that for granted.
And especially in some of the genres we're talking about, the comedies, the action films, the superhero movies. I actually went back to see Avengers Endgame the weekend it opened. I'd seen it a month earlier because I wanted to watch it with the fans. Mm-hmm. And here's something I've told parents of, you know, adolescents and teenagers for generations now. Your kids not only want to go to the movies, they want to get away from you. They want to go somewhere. And the movies is the first. That's the first thing when a kid is 12, 13. It's the first thing they can do where mom or dad drops them off at the mall or the multiplex and picks them up in 2.5 hours. And they get to meet their friends and have that cool going out experience. Yeah. It's been that way since the fucking 20s, you know, and always will be. So theaters, I think, are going to, and I think Jeff is true too, people really miss that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I'm happy it's back.
Then you got to fix your pretzel bites in the local
theater. I know. It's the Rosemont one's killing
come
me.
Come on.
The Rosemont one. You
that should
that
be a criminal offense, and they got people in Rosemont that know how to enact legislation.
It's a problem. If you're listening, Rosemont, you're stop with the pretzel bites. They're just cutting up the Bavarian, Richard.
That's
a big problem.
Listen, they got to get their game back on, too. It's been a while. They got to get back in stride. You know, they're like a guy coming off a rehab, you know, assignment in AAA. He's going to get his arm back. Don't worry.
Yeah, they really are. Richard, thanks again. Screen Time. Go listen to it. Go download it. This was fun. Thanks.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. That's it for today, everybody. We'll see you next time.